So thank you very much, Rukmini, for this very, let us say, affectionate introduction. I want to welcome all the students and friends who are listening and viewing this program. And looking very much forward to share what has become my favorite subjects. I always think just real spiritual life should not just give us information, it should give us transformation. It should change something in our heart. So as we go now through this program, I would be very happy if all of you would really experience a genuine spiritual joy in the heart, and really also get something to take away from this program that will help you in your own efforts on your own spiritual path. So we will be doing a guided meditation towards the end, and if you allow me, I will dive right into it. As Rukmini said, if you have any questions that come up during my talk, please put them in the chat box, and I won't see them, but Rukmini will see them, and then will tell me when it's time or when to answer them. Otherwise, there is a period set aside for only questions and answers. Let us start. Om Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Vistaya Bhutale Smadvadyanta Swami Nityanam. The subject matter is cleansing the heart. It's quite interesting to look at the heart from a spiritual perspective. If we look at the heart from a purely material perspective, we see it as an organ that pumps blood. If we look at the heart from a psychological perspective, that is not the perspective of a surgeon, we can see there are emotions in the heart. When an Italian person says, amore, it means love, he will point towards his heart. He will not point towards his head. We know in our own life how the heart is the seat of our emotions. When we say, I know in my heart this is true. There is also a spiritual heart. And that heart has been described to be like a mirror. Let us look at the function of a mirror for a moment. Whatever is in front of the mirror, that becomes reflected in the mirror. I think you know this from your universities. When you use the restroom and you come out, you wash your hands and you look in the mirror and you just see, oh, okay, I need to just wash something or adjust something in my shirt and so on. Whatever and whoever comes before the mirror is reflected there. However, in a mirror, whatever leaves the mirror for good. You cannot ask the mirror, or there is no technical way, at least now, to find out who were the people who were previously before you went in the before the mirror, who were there. The heart is different. Whatever comes to our heart is reflected there, but it stays there. The Vedas describe it stays there in forms of sanskaras, deep impressions. What you saw in your childhood, that is somewhere recorded in your heart. What happened to you when you were young, a young child, a small child, that is still in the heart. What happened to you now is recorded in the heart. So much so that at the moment when you leave this world, all these impressions are still there, like books in an endlessly vast library. The heart records all impressions and keeps them in as you do in a library. And some of these impressions are very, very good and favorable. But many of the impressions are connected with anxiety, with fear, with unfulfilled desires, with various forms of complexities. So when we look at this from the point of view of neuroscience, in neuroscience we have found out, as we think a thought over and over and over again, these thoughts create a circuit inside us. And we again and again utilize this circuit, and we go through this circuit. It's also called a neuro pathway, which you trample through. You know, think of it like our mind, our subconscious is like a forest, and we have made a path through the forest, which we go through again and again. Same things, same path, same experiences, same perceptions. There are so much more in the forest. There are valleys, there are lakes, there are old trees, which you do never see in your life if you stay only on that one path. Are we humans not like this? We wake up, okay, what to do? Brush my teeth. Then we go to the bathroom, we can go this path with closed eyes. Then we come out and we do our daily routine. Then we have a certain, let us say, a certain amount of people on our mobile phone. We phone a few of these people. We more or less go the same path every day. It's ingrained in our life. It is from the Vedic perspective, it's these experiences have become, they stick to us. They are, if you so want, dust on the marrow of the heart. So when we speak of cleansing the heart, my dear people, we want to become especially free from the unfavorable programs which are in there. Lust, unfulfilled desire, anger, envy. Oh no, he has so much more than I have. So many more clicks on his Facebook page. Oh, and he's so much more foolish than I am. Envy, this is called envy. And so on. And this is to be cleansed away. This is to be brought away. There was once a guru. He was preparing for his departure, but before he died, he needed to find a successor. So what he did is he called two of his disciples who were most talented, most learned, into his room and said, "I would like to give you an task, and by the way you fulfill the task, we will know who of you is more qualified to take up my seat and to become my successor." please go into a hotel and tell me what you see in the hotel. What is the lesson? Now you must know, these were monks. They don't go in a hotel, they stay in the ashram. They don't mix so much with ordinary people unless they are sharing wisdom with them. So the first monk came back after a few hours. Guru Maharaj, he said, I didn't see anything special. Of course, people registered in the hotel. They stayed in their room. They cooked their food. They ate their food, which was cooked in the restaurant. I could not see any particular lesson except that there was a constant coming and going. Let's wait for my second disciple, said the guru. So the second disciple had also gone to the hotel, and he returned after 3 days even, and he said, Guru Maharaj, thank you for sending me to the hotel. I have made a wonderful realization. See, there was a mirror in the hotel lounge where the people arrived. And everything was reflected. Everyone was reflected in the mirror. People looked into the mirror, adjusted their clothes, and whatever. But that was not what intrigued me. What intrigued me was every morning, before the first guests arrived, the hotel owner took a cloth and wiped the mirror clean. From this, I learned that every single day in the life of a person, he must wipe or clean the mirror of his heart, because so many impressions come there. So some of them are not good. And if they are not cleansed, they stay and they influence the person. If you make a check of your thoughts every day, how many of them are progressive? How many of them are compassionate? How many of them are pure to think of the ultimate good? Many of the thoughts are repetitive thoughts. Oh, I'm not good enough. Oh, this is called the inner critic. Or the inner commenter. Oh, look at him, look at her. Then there is someone who is always a social analyst inside the mind, analyzing everything, blah, 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 blah. And so on. So many of our thoughts are difficult English word. They are thought in a repetitive, negative pattern. But we all know to improve our life starts here, not in the outside, because we will always do what we think in the inside. If you want to change your life, if you want to come to the next level in your life, if you want to transform your consciousness, you must do it here, in the heart, in the mirror of the heart. And you must do it daily, because you live daily with inputs or with the repetitions that come from your mind. You live daily with the dust on the mirror of your heart. So, how to do this? This is done through mantra meditation. Let me tell you what is a mantra. The direct translation of mantra, definition of mantra is that a mantra is that which frees the mind from unwanted occupation. Freeze it. It's like wiping the dust from a mirror and making it clean and able to reflect as it is, without distortions. So the mantra is syllables often related to God, or an aspect of God. No? Govinda Hari, Gopala Hari, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. There are sound vibrations that are very potent because they are, let us say, they include the source of all the power. And that is from where these mantras have these amazing potencies to free and liberate your mind from unwanted thought. I would like to give you an example how a mantra can be spiritually effective. Because we think, well, these are syllables, no? And some people say, well, we can also have our own mantra, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, or anything. We can invent our own mantra. But people who say like this have not yet gone deep enough to discover the essence of mantras. I would like to give you an analogy which can show you what is the essence of a mantra. Let me use the example of metal. When you put ordinary metal into fire, it takes on the qualities of the fire. This, for instance, it's a musical instrument. If I put it into the fire, it will start to first become warm, then it will become red and glowing, and then it will have the fiery quality in it. I could take this metal, put it into the house, and it would ignite the wood in the house and burn the whole thing to ashes. This is how powerful transference is, the transference of the power of the fire. In the same way, there are special syllables that denote Krishna. And Krishna comes into these syllables and resides there, like the fire in the metal. And at that time, when Krishna becomes present, you are not just saying syllables. No. You're not just focusing on sound. No. You are actually meeting Krishna in sound. Just like metal can absorb fire and become, in a sense, fire, syllables absorb Krishna's presence, and then they are Krishna. This is so wonderful that you might say, wow, really, woo. It is really something wonderful. Have you ever thought of meeting God? You think, well, that's not possible for me, and I'm so young, I have to study, and anyways, I have... look at my mobile telephone, then you know how distracted I am, what apps I have, what contacts I have. It's not on my agenda. When you do mantra meditation, you feel that within your life, a powerful presence comes that purifies your mind. And what you can also feel, that you start to see, this is essential for my life, and this is not so essential. This is something I want to keep, and this is dust, which is something which can slowly go. I have grown, I don't need to move, to keep this. My spiritual master, spiritual teacher, he came once and visited us in Germany. And he gave regular classes, one to the TV, it was seen all over, and others to radio stations. But he also received prominent members of the society, professors, leaders, and so on. And once I was there, he addressed a whole room full of highly influential people. And he addressed the question, what was his purpose? Why did he come? And this is what he said. I have not come to teach you philosophy. I have come simply to ask you to chant. Purify your consciousness and realize who you are. Not theory. Many words, many concepts, many information. No. He wanted to help people to purify the dust which is on the mirror of the heart, so that the mirror becomes clean and they can see themselves. When you look into a dirty mirror, you can see only that it's caked with mud and you don't see any reflection. Some people feel like this when they look inside. I once did this in a school. I said, now let us close the eyes and breathe. And just go a little inside. Then two of the boys said, no, we are so afraid to close our eyes. We don't know. This is out of our comfort zone. No? People have lost their contact with themselves. And when the self is lost, everything else is lost. The chanting purifies the consciousness because there is a God inside. There's fire inside that burns away all the unnecessary things which have been accumulated in our mind and which cover us and inconvenience us, so that very often our mind, which is filled with the wrong thing, becomes an enemy to us. We have this situation now in Germany where there is lockdown. I can imagine it's also in Durban, and many people are not able to distract themselves after they have seen all the media and the TV programs. Everything is chewed through. People then are forced to be with themselves. If you can't be with yourself, it means you are probably in bad company. No? If you can't be with yourself alone, it means you're in bad company. People suffer from this, and therefore the suicide rate has really gone up. They should have learned the science of mantra meditation, purify their consciousness from all that drives them. I want to now introduce a simple mantra practice to you at home. When you chant a mantra, what is the most important thing you have to keep in your mind? The most important thing is you need to be there. You need to be present. You cannot be everywhere else with your mind. In the ancient Upanishads, Chandogya Upanishad, a wonderful example is given. When you take, here the mind is compared with a falcon. Falcon, bird, which is used for hunting also. The falcon flies everywhere. Our mind is also able to go to many things. Now, if you want to train a falcon, you will take a little string and you will tie it or fasten it to a perch. Perch is where we can sit on. No? And at the beginning, the falcon will fly all over, but finally he will come to rest and sit on the perch. In the same way, when you start to chant, it could happen, or meditate, or do mantra meditation, your mind is restless. It could go everywhere. But you need, if it's tied to the mantra, if you have brought it in contact with the mantra, then it comes to rest and it comes to peace and it sits right by the side of Krishna. So the most important feature, which is not always understood, is you have to focus. You have to enter with your mind the sound vibration. You have to be there. So I would like to make now a little experiment. I know it is, let us say, unusual to meditate before a device like a computer or a mobile telephone, but why not? We have to learn to meditate really in all situations. And I will give you a little instructions how to do it. It will be a very pleasant experience, but I need you to participate. I need you to participate, absolutely. That is, please stop eating chips at this moment. If you eat chips or do anything, please stop multitasking. Find a good place before your device and first sit straight. I need to just give a little side instruction to the technical team here. At one stage, I will request our, I forgot her good name, Rukmini, the technical assistance, it was Mataji, I will request her to put the mantra on the screen for everyone to see. Yes, so I will tell you. When I raise my hand, it means it's time for you to place the mantra. First of all, sit down in an upright position. We will do some breathing, so to expand the volume in you, please bring the shoulders up, roll them back. That will open your chest area where the lungs are so that you can breathe properly. And then we will focus our eyes one object. You can watch me on the screen. That's most probably the easiest to catch the further instruction. And we will do a few deep breaths. When the hand goes down, it's an exhale. When the hand goes up, it's an inhale. As we exhale a little bit more than we are accustomed to. Complete exhale. Our attention is entirely the in and outgoing breath. Let's do three deep breaths on our own now. As we are breathing, our technical assistant will blend in one mantra. Now we will say the mantra. Previously, our mind was only fixed on breathing. Now we go with our mind to the mantra. We say the mantra and we listen to it. We say the mantra and we listen. With everything which we have, we listen. Our ears, with our mind, and with our heart. This is a very, very deep practice where we need to put our heart in. I will say the mantra, and then one time alone, and then we will repeat them in one flow. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now all together, wherever you are, please, all together, let us meditate on the mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Again, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Again, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Good, but we can do much, we can go much deeper, and we will do this now. Whenever you start the mantra anew, please focus all your mental power of concentration on the first Hare. In the beautiful drawing, which is on your screen, it's the Hare on the upper left. Then you go with me through the whole mantra. And when you have finished one mantra, you again bring your entire focus and attention on the first Hare. It's almost like you want to really listen. Someone who really wants to listen, he knows this information which is coming now is vital to my life. It is critical. So you really focus. You want to really hear what is inside the sound vibration. Okay. We can start all together when we hear the signal. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Full focus. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you so much. We will leave this picture on the screen for one more exercise. What happens when you do full focus? You create a new path, a new orientation. You bring a new element into your mind, and it begins to subtly change. In the image which we use, the image of the fire, the mantra bears the presence of the Lord, just like metal bears the fire. In the image, speaking in this image, it's almost with the first absolute absorption of focus, it's like a spark which is brought inside. And that spark will develop into a wonderful divine fire. You actually will become, as we say in contemporary English, fired up, but with divine strength. It will increase. Let it grow, let it grow, let it grow, and let the old me, let it step to the side so that the new me, the better version of myself, can be generated like the fire which grows and grows and grows. So we will just end this session now by doing one more time. We will focus on the first, not only on the first hari, I'm sorry. We will not just focus on the first hari. We will try to focus on all the various names. If you're really so strong, as you often project yourself to be, then now tell your mind what to do. And you will see miracles unfold in your life. It will be very good. So our task here is to chant and listen to not only the first hari of the mantra, but to the entire mantra. And whenever the mind should wander, as it will do, remember the falcon, the hectic falcon, the bird, then just gently bring it back to the mantra and it will become peaceful after some time. Good. I will change the tonality a little bit. Hare Krishna. Yes, it's for everyone now. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you very much for participating in this exercise. I could feel a good energy was growing up. We can now take the beautiful mantra away from the screen, because our exercise has been finished now. Very, very, very nice to do this. For me, the chanting, this mantra meditation, I have obviously gone with it on my own life's journey. I have chanted in the Himalayas, in the snow when I was lost. I have chanted by the banks of sacred rivers like the Ganga. I have meditated or shared the chanting on big public stages with your well above 30,000 people. I've given many retreats, written books about it. It was a journey, and it is a journey. What I have noted on the journey, that which starts as a simple process of meditation opens up into a meeting, a divine meeting with the one who has so many names. And that is very rewarding. I invite you now to pose your questions, and I will do my best to answer them briefly. So let us turn to Rukmini, our host, and ask her, what is the first question, Rukmini?
Hi, Krish Maharaj. So the first question comes from Radha Niranjan, and she's asking, do we consider the unfavorable traits in the heart as material? And will cleansing it help to uncover our original spiritual identity? Furthermore, does that mean that we shouldn't have to identify deeply with those traits when we are trying to get rid of them?
Yeah. Yes, these unfavorable traits in the heart are external to us. They are foreigners. Our consciousness is originally described to be pure without these unfavorable things. And whenever we can get rid of them by the cleansing process, this happens when the mantra is repeated again and again, oh, all of a sudden, and you feel really free and rid, then it's a sign of relief. I remember once Gandhi, he said something very nice. He said, these greed and material desires, they are like strangers who come with boots, dirty boots with mud into our hearts, and they leave a traces there. So why should, he said, why should he do this? Why should he allow these strangers to come in? But as we all know, it's sometimes very, very difficult to get rid of unwanted guests, no? Do you have this experience? You're in a conversation and you think, oh, how can I get out of here? This is really so unnecessary conversation. It is not required, this conversation, but it's difficult to stop. When you start to chant, but only if you absorb yourself, if you bring your mind away from the unwanted guests and just stay with the sound, you can make tremendous, you can have a clean house again. And you are the owner of your house. You need to do this. Unwanted, maybe we have to be socially polite sometimes and let unwanted people give them a little glass of water and so on. And we don't throw them out immediately, no? But unwanted thoughts and material contaminations, you may go. Good. Second question, please.
The second question is from Pratik Agarwal. He is asking, how does mantra meditation help us cope with anxiety? And how do we overcome the self-critic within us?
What a wonderful question you have. Also the first question. Ooh, such good questions you have. How does mantra meditation help us cope with anxiety? What is anxiety in the first place? Anxiety is an insecurity which comes up when you are no longer secure. You're not in your space. And the only way to get rid of anxiety is to become secure again. Let me give you an example from my childhood. I had a very, let us say, a grandfather who was really full of wisdom. And we would make regularly a walk. And I remember we would leave the house, the gate was closed. And then I would start to run. I was very small, so my grandfather had been holding my hand, but I was tearing my hand out of his strong hand, and I started to run all over the place, playing here and playing there, until there were some dogs. I didn't have a good experience with dogs. So whenever I saw the dogs, I felt so insecure. They could smell also my anxiety. And they came running towards me. And I knew, oops, now I'm in trouble. I better run back to my grandfather. And I was taking shelter. I was grabbing his strong hand, and he would say "Hut!" to the dogs, and they would leave. In the same way, we come in anxiety when we lose our shelter, our centeredness, our being really together with that strong force which can give us shelter, that is Krishna or God. Whenever we turn our back, whenever we leave him, there they are, the anxieties. Do you know that it is natural in the world to confront anxiety? Because this is the place of anxiety. It's called Kuntaloka, the place of anxiety or fear. The spiritual world, in contrast, is designated as Vaikuntaloka, the place without anxiety. When the fish leaves the ocean, he will confront dryness and he will fight for existence. The same thing happens when you leave Krishna, when you leave the spiritual reality. Wow, you confront the anxieties of the world. No, it is a must. It is natural. So the solution to this is to come back into his shelter. And that is done through mantra meditation. As I said, as we chant the names of Krishna, these are not just syllables, it's not just words. They are imbued with his divine presence. It is actually Krishna. That's like the metal stops being metal. It's fire when it is fireized, when it is in the fire. No, so yes, the first thing which a good chanter feels is actually relief from anxieties. But again, I sometimes joke, don't chant like the Hare Krishna people. They are very distracted when they chant. You can watch them in the temple. They run away, run around with the bebek. They talk in between. Some check their mobile telephones. Not like that. You will never experience anything when you do it like this. You have to absorb your mind. When you are, you have to be present. When you are on a train station and the train comes, is this a guarantee that you will go from your station to the station where you want to go? If I go in the Berlin train station, I have a ticket, Frankfurt. Is that the guarantee that I come to Frankfurt? No, I have to enter the train. It's a simple point. Then only the train can take me. So when I'm joining a spiritual organization, or when I have moved to the temple, I'm in the station. Fine. Congratulations. You made a significant way. But now you have to enter the worship. Now you have to enter the meditation. Now you have to absorb yourself. Very important. So I said like this. There are many very good and very advanced spiritualists in the temples and in the Hare Krishna movement, but you will find also the distracted kind. Rukmini laughs. She has maybe also seen the distracted kind. The next question. Yeah.
Marsh, we have time for another question.
We have time.
One question is, how did the dust get on the mirror in the first place? This is from Sanjeev Agarwal.
Yes. Yes. I saw someone who said thank you. Yes, I can't see the questions. They all go to Rukmini first. Why? Because I can't see without glasses. I'm an old man, believe it or not. So how did the dust get there in the first place? Srila Prabhupada gave a very, very good analogy for it. He said, when the soul leaves the pure atmosphere of the spiritual world and wanders around in the material world, it will get it will become influenced by the dirt of the world. We in our little ashram have a white car, white color. And when the car is driven over muddy paths, then the mud goes all over the car, even to the mirror it comes. So in the same way, when you, the pure soul, come into this in contact with the material world, then just like a car who gets dirty from the streets, you also get the dust. So you can see from this example that it is almost unavoidable in the material world to pick up dust. It's almost unavoidable because you are in a dusty place if you so want, no? And it will affect you to a larger or smaller degree. That is there. Therefore, you need daily, in this world, a daily sadhana, it's called, that is a practice which will wipe away the dust from your consciousness. So the 45 yourself. When you have done good mantra meditation and you go through the world, you see the world with different eyes. You don't become influenced by the world so much, but it is you who influence the world. People who come in contact with you are like this. So, my dear everyone, I am aware there could be more questions. Today I'm on many forums, and I suggest, in the interest of your bhakti retreat, because there are so many things happening, that we don't go too much over time today. I was very happy to share something which is so dear to my own heart with you. And I want to give you a summary of what we have learned today. The first is the mantra has power, potency to cleanse our consciousness because, I'm sorry, it is it is imbued with the divine presence of the Lord. No? Remember the iron which is held into the fire and stops being just ordinary iron or metal. It is. So in the same way, these syllables are not ordinary. They are extraordinary. I have seen a saint, a saintly person once in India. You know, there is there are garments like shawls which have the mantra printed on it in Sanskrit, beautiful shawls. You can look in the shops in our local temples, you will find maybe such a shawl. So this shawl was lying on the floor. So I saw one saintly person who saw the shawl with the mantra on it. And do you know what he did? He paid his obeisances to the shawl. Yes, I'm serious. He kneeled down
and he
paid his obeisances to the shawl, and then he put it on an elevated position. And he said, this is not an ordinary syllables. This is not an ordinary thing. It is, here is Krishna in his sound form. The second point which I... And the effect which happens as we chant it is that the dust from the heart is cleansed, like the dust on a mirror is removed. But this happens only if you fasten the mind to the mantra. Remember the example of the falcon? No? It was flying everywhere, but it was fastened to a perch, and then it finds rest at the perch. In the same way, our mind, which is fastened to the mantra, will eventually find peace and purity when it rests. So these were some of the points I heard. We are having an introductory class today, so I did not want to make more than 3 points, but it goes unlimitedly deep. I invite all of you to make this journey in your own life. And a traveler should never think, I have reached the end station. No, then his journey stops. He should continue, then he will see many more things. This is a little bit in the summary. Thank you so much, and I want to congratulate you for your efforts of doing the Bhakti School. I have heard from my good friend, His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, about your very good work in South Africa. And I still remember when I came. You know what's my favorite memory? This is Durban, right? Rukmini, Durban.
Yes, this is Durban.
After Durban, I went with my assistant and a very small group of devotees to the Drakensberg. And once, it was after the Ratha Yatra, so I went on foot to a prehistoric cave in the Drakensberg. And what I saw on the walls of the cave was people standing in a circle, prehistoric men, and there was someone in the middle, and he was leading something like a chant. You could see there were like dancing, and I could see, wow, even prehistoric men knew about the potency of chanting mantras. Maybe they were afraid of lions at that time, and that was their main anxiety. Maybe I'm speculating, and they became free from their anxieties by mantra meditation. I was very surprised. I'm a person who does not carry mobile telephones, so I had no facility to make a snapshot. But I still remember this was my favorite discovery in South Africa. I thank all of you very much. I will just speak with Rukmini two sentences afterwards, but I think we can now say goodbye to everyone else. I wish you all the best. Take good care. And don't forget to chant with absorption.